trout with a big fat worm. We clap along to the fast-paced jig, Ma's hands laced over Hannah's to guide her so she can join along, and the baby falls into a fit of giggles. Desperate not to spoil the mood, I take special care to keep far away from her so she doesn't fall into another fit. By Pa's fourth song, a slow and beautiful piece about twinkling stars and a black blanket of sky, the baby is lying against Ma's shoulder and sleeping, her thick lashes against her cheeks. I wonder if she'll ever love me again. Bedtime comes not long after that, and Ma gently takes the sleeping baby and lays her on the far side of the mattress they share with Pa. Joanna, Charles, Emily, and I line up on our own mattress, and all face the same way so we can tickle the back of each other's necks and shoulders until we're too tired to lift our arms. I keep breathing, keep repeating Emily's words to myself. Everything will be all right. The room quiets. The heavy breathing gets replaced by snores, and I find myself drifting out to the faint red glow of the dying fireplace and the lingering smell of crispy seasoned pork and freshly built floor. Maybe it won't be too hard to ignore all that's happened if it goes away now, fades away like a bad dream, just like Henry and my baby. My last thought before I fall asleep is, if my baby was a girl, I would have named her Emily. Hannah is screaming. It feels like only a second has passed, but the fire is completely dead now, and the baby's cries tear through the pitch black that surrounds us. They aren't like her normal cries either, but louder and harder than I've ever heard any child scream in my entire life, like she's in unbearable pain. What is... Ma's voice is cut off when the screams intensify. The children and Emily and I all sit up in sleepy panic. Edmund! My Ma is suddenly screaming, right along with the baby. Light a candle! Oh, my Lord, Hannah! There's something all over Hannah! What's happening? Joanna cries from my side and blindly grabs at me in the dark. I pull her shaking body close to my own. Pa darts across the cabin, trips over the rocking chair, and in 10 seconds more he is scrambling to light the oil lamp from the corner of the room. Suddenly the light flickers on, and the room is filled with the softest yellow glow, hardly enough to see clearly, but I tell Joanna to hug Charles while I scramble up and make my way over to the still screaming Hannah. She sounds to be in complete agony, and from where I stand I can see that she is flailing against the mattress hard. The closer I get, the more confused I become. The baby appears to be covered in a shimmering black liquid. I follow the trail of it that spills over the side of the mattress, squinting, and reach out to touch it. I poke my finger into the black just as Pa reaches the bed, and the light from the kerosene lamp shows me the truth just in time. It's not liquid that's covering Hannah and the bed around her. And Ma realizes this at the same instant I do. We both scream. Ants. Red prairie ants, the size of bullets coming up from a tiny hole next to the mattress and covering my flailing baby sister from head to toe while she gasps for air. The crimson ants skitter across the white mattress in a panicked reaction to the light. Hannah's violent movements slow, and she begins to twitch. I hear myself let out a sob and desperately try to brush the disgusting things away from her chubby face while Ma does the same. They cling to her skin, eating her alive, trying to burrow themselves into her eyes and ears and mouth. Pa nearly drops the lantern in shock. He bellows for us to move away from the mattress. My hands are on fire and dotted with the disgusting creatures, and I slap at myself wildly to prevent them from moving up my arms. Ma cries out in pain, her hands covered as well, but she lifts Hannah in the dark and stumbles over to the dish tub filled with water, still cloudy with food chunks and grease from tonight's dinner, and dunks the silent baby completely under. Emily leads Joanna and Charles to the corner farthest away from the mattress while Ma tears off Hannah's soaked clothing. There are more ants underneath her sleeping gown, clinging to her like sewing pins, and without hesitation, Ma dunks the baby into the filthy water again. I have a clean, dry rag waiting for Ma, and she snatches it from me gratefully. She rubs the baby down with it, and Pa leans closer with the lamp to inspect the damage. The baby moans, and very slowly lifts her hand up, searching for someone to help her, and I take it and hold it against my neck that is covered in tears. I try to hum in a smooth, calming rhythm, but I'm breathing so hard that the sigh breaks apart into a couple of panicked huffs. I want to see God's face, just so I can spit in it. "She needs help," Ma says in a shaking voice. "She's going to die, Edmund. She needs help now." Sure enough, Hannah's face and limbs are so swollen that they are almost unrecognizable. The puffy skin is as scarlet as the monsters that did this to her, and completely covered in raised white bumps. Her fat little hand goes limp and falls away from my face. She isn't breathing, really, just letting out little puffs of air and a series of quick, sharp wheezes. "Dr. Jacobson," I manage through my tears, "take Hannah to the woods. Maybe he can help her." Pa goes into action immediately and has Rocky saddled and ready to go in less than 5 minutes. He promises that even if Hannah needs to stay at the doctor's cabin, he will come back to let us know what is happening before dawn. He takes the baby from Ma, kisses her, then pulls himself up and onto the horse with his free hand. "Stay away from the ants until I get back," he commands. "Wait outside or in the wagon if they start to spread out." He is gone. The winds in the prairie are dead for once, and the only sound to accompany the shock in the air is Charles's gentle weeping. "Is Hannah going to die?" Joanna sniffs and pulls at her dark curly hair with both hands. "God wouldn't do that, right, Ma? Hannah can't die." "I do not know, child." Ma stares after Pa, her eyes lost and unblinking. "If only I did." I turn from the sight of Pa and Rocky, loping toward the forest line by the light of the moon. Emily looks on, wide-eyed, pale, like the time I was 7 and she was 5, and a grizzly bear wandered, snarling, into the front clearing of our cabin. I don't know what to do, or say, or think. This cursed prairie. "I need to take care of the ants," I hear myself say. Ma doesn't move or speak or turn away from the forest. "I'm going to smash every last one of them." "Wait," Emily snaps into reality and grabs my elbow. "Maybe you shouldn't. Your hands." My hands. I haven't even looked at them or felt them really since I first realized I was being bitten. They are swollen, puffy, covered in bites, but it's nothing compared to what Hannah is going through, and I cannot find it in myself to admit how much they hurt. "My hands are fine," I say. I go into the cabin, slip on my work boots, and take the abandoned kerosene lamp that is sitting by the door. Emily commands Joanna and Charles to wait at the door while she follows me slowly to the mattress that Ma and Pa and Hannah share. When we get near, I ready my foot to stomp down on the mass of squirming insects as soon as I see them. I lift the lantern and hold my breath. All of the ants are gone. Every last one of them. It's as if they were never even here at all. 19. When Ma was 6 months into her pregnancy with Hannah, the snow started. It fell in fat, fluffy flakes, the sticky kind that quickly piled up enough to make snowmen and angels and ice treats drizzled with maple syrup. At first, it was fun. Emily and I played in the powder with Joanna and Charles, while Ma, swollen in the belly but rosy in the cheeks, brewed a pot of hot tea with honey for when we returned. "Don't stay out too late with them, Amanda," Ma yelled from the open cabin door, as Emily and I walked up the slope of the mountain with Pa's old sled. "I don't want you to catch your deaths out there." "Just one more, Ma," Emily yelled back through the slow falling wall of thickened snowflakes. She set the sled down and began adjusting her mittens with her teeth. "All right, Joe, get on." Joanna cautiously lifted one leg over the sled and fell onto the seat, near the back to leave the front open for Charles. I picked him up and set him on top, and Joanna wrapped her arms around his middle and pulled. "Hold on tight, Joanna," Charles instructed very seriously. His hands clenched around the front rope so hard that I knew his knuckles must be white beneath his mittens. Ever since he found out that he would no longer be the baby of the family, he was determined to show us all that he was indeed a big boy now. My heart warmed at the sight of such pure courage. I planted my boot in front of the top corner of the sled, then stood to straighten my back and check out the clearing below to our left. I thought that Emily was holding on to the opposite corner with her own foot, but I realized as soon as Joanna shifted her weight that I was very wrong. The sled was sucked away from us in an instant. The trees! We hadn't readjusted the sled to face the open space down the side of the mountain, the only safe place around the cabin to ride. I prayed to God that Joanna would lose her balance and fall off the back of the sled, taking Charles with her in an effort to save herself. She didn't. Joanna teetered for a second, giving me hope, but her back stayed strong in the end, and soon the children's screams were echoing through the icy trees surrounding them. They zoomed dangerously close past several dense trunks, and my bellows at Joanna to roll off were cut short when I realized that they were heading straight for a massive pine. "Oh, my God!" Emily cried out and threw her gloved hands over her face. "Please, no!" "Joanna!" I yelled louder than I thought myself capable of. In a second, the front door to the cabin flew open, and there was Ma, wide-eyed with her hand clutched over her swollen belly. I wondered if we would wipe the vibrant blood splatters from the trees after this terrible accident, or if we'd just let the snow build up over it all until everything was white again. I wondered how I would feel for the rest of my life, knowing that my little brother and sister were dead because of me. But by God's grace, Joanna suddenly rolled off the sled, clutching Charles to her chest as she did. The children tumbled over one another with violent speed, but came to a sudden stop when they collided with a dense cluster of bushes. The snow from the bushes flew away from the branches and scattered quietly around their bodies. The sled, newly free of its previous weight, veered to the right before crashing into another tree, making a horrific cracking sound and snapping itself clean in half. Shattered bark exploded away from the trunk, and then all was finally still. Ma's cries were ragged as she stumbled out into the snow, and I only vaguely noted that she wasn't wearing boots. She strode through the white, her dress dragging in a soaked pile behind her, and reached into the bushes to grab Charles. Emily cried out in relief when Ma set Charles standing upright, and he stayed that way. Soon after, Joanna was at his side, shaking like a leaf, but with no broken bones or blood. Ma pulled them back into the house, Emily and I trailing wordlessly behind. Once inside, Ma produced 4 mugs filled to the brim with steaming honey tea. Joanna was still shaking as she drank hers, but Charles was as hyper as if he'd eaten a whole package of Christmas sweets in one sitting.
"That was fun, Ma,"
he chirped as Ma stepped out of her soaked dress and layers of long underwear. She carefully laid the clothing in front of the fire and stood, shivering, with a blanket wrapped around her while she waited for them to dry. Her largely swollen belly stuck out from the front of the blanket, and I drank my tea even though all I wanted to do was cry. "Not for me," she said softly as she bounced up and down on her toes. "You almost gave your Ma a heart attack." "Me too," Emily said after a loud gulp of tea. "I really thought you were both about to be dead." "Emily," I said and shook my head at her. "What a thing to say."
"You thought so too," she quipped back. "I could tell."
"Enough," Ma said sternly, and everyone quieted. "The Lord kept you safe, and it's all over now. We will say an extra prayer tonight in thanks of our good health." She was just wiggling back into her dry clothes when Pa came through the door, home from hunting much earlier than usual. His beard was flecked with snow, and when he pulled off his hat, he sent icy water flying over the table where we sat.
"The storm isn't stopping," Pa said in a deep gruff, "and the mountain is becoming unsafe for travel. It's a good thing we have enough supplies to last us for a good few months. We're not going anywhere for a while, at least."
"Oh, my," Ma said, and rushed over to pour Pa some tea. "What a harsh winter this has been." But it turned out harsh wasn't the weather, and harsh wasn't eating nothing but fried cornmeal cakes for days, and harsh wasn't having to stay inside at all times with 3 other children and 2 adults. Harsh was the cough that fell upon Ma only a few days after the sledding incident, innocent enough at first, but as persistent and increasingly damaging as the storm outside. Harsh was when Ma became so delirious with fever that she started calling us by different names.
Pa was able to shoot a deer and store the body just outside the front door, embedded in snow and frozen solid until it was time to cook it up, chunk by chunk, in either hot water to make broth for Ma, or fried in a pan with gravy and potatoes for stew. Pa hoped that the storm would let up a little bit by the time we needed more meat. Ma's cough deepened into a harsh bark that racked her body from the inside out. By the time a fortnight had passed, the deer was gone, and the steady downfall had transformed into an angry, nearly horizontal monster of whistling winds and bitter cold that was sharp enough to cut straight to the bone. Ma's fever was still raging by then, and we all knew it wouldn't be good for the baby. A miscarriage was suddenly a very real possibility, as was death. It carried on for 3 months. 3 months of changing sheets, soaked yellow with perspiration, and hallucinations and forcing broth made with roots or herbs down Ma's throat. The days bled into each other, and one early evening as Emily went to check on her, she noticed that Ma's water had broken, and the time to deliver the baby boy or girl had come. After Hannah was born, I developed a terrible fear of dying in the winter, of being buried in a wooden box 6 feet beneath the small knob of a headstone, embedded in the frozen ground like a maggot in flesh. I couldn't imagine anything worse than lying there in the dark, wishing for a candle, or a blanket, or my Ma. Above the ground, things would be silent, except for the icy wind shrieking through the trees of the mountains that would be my final resting place. But below the surface, in the frigid blackness, there'd be sounds, squirming, clawing, biting. Insects and worms would make their way in, make a nest of the inside of my head, and I'd hear them even more then. I wouldn't be able to scream. I wouldn't be able to fight them off. How much time will pass before I find myself there? Hannah and my baby were proof that age means nothing, that even the youngest can dance with death before they've had the chance to really live in the first place. Am I there now? 20. As soon as it is light out, Emily and I hand out jerky strips to the children for breakfast, then take them outside to sit on the front bench of the wagon while we wait for Pa and Hannah to return. Ma has been waiting inside since dawn came, sitting without a word as she rocks gently in her chair before the fire. Whenever one of us tries to approach her, she waves us off weakly, tells us to keep an eye out for Pa. The hole in the floor that the ants came up from was tiny, a split in between two boards that was otherwise unnoticeable. But after we saw that the terrible things were gone, we poured hot wax over it to harden anyway. There are dozens of them still in the dish tub, bloated and shining like red marbles. Most of them were dead last I looked, but some were squirming weakly across the surface of the dirty water in an attempt to cling to the side and each other. I hope they all die slowly. We sit arm to arm on the wagon bench, with Emily and me on the ends and the children in between us. Nobody speaks. We all concentrate intently on the forest line a mile ahead of us, squinting into the sunlight to search for any sign of life. I feel as if I should have known something was coming, like the cries in the night were warnings that I did not heed. But how was I meant to prevent the miscarriage, or the ant attack? How was I meant to keep my wits when Hannah transformed into the baby that I saw standing in the prairie that night, with her dead fish eyes and her ear on my womb, before she nearly flung herself into the fire? This isn't a test or a challenge or a puzzle to be solved and defeated. It's just happening, and it will never stop. As soon as Pa returns with or without Hannah, I must do what I can to convince Emily to help me talk to Ma and Pa about leaving the prairie. I will tell them everything. I will tell them about Henry and the baby and of the time he told me stories about some haunted fields that sounded a whole lot like the ones Zeke described, a whole lot like these fields. I'll bet anything that it was Henry who told my Pa about this area in the settlement that day, Henry who drew the map up and eagerly overestimated how many homes would be available, just so that Pa would be more likely to leave. That mewling, beef-witted maltworm. There is one other thing my grandfather always said. Zeke's words repeat suddenly in my mind. He said that even though the prairie wasn't safe, the forest always would be. Dread blooms in my stomach as I imagine something else happening to one of the children or Emily. I must be especially cautious. I don't entirely trust Zeke, but as much as I hate to admit it, we are likely going to need his help. Mid-morning passes in a wave of rolling white clouds and the whistle of winds in the grasses. Birds shriek at one another and play games in the air. The tips of jackrabbit ears can be seen bobbing up and down through the prairie. The forest stays still. Pa and Hannah still aren't back by midday. Emily hasn't spoken much since the attack, and neither have the children. What is taking Pa so long? He said he'd come back by morning, even if just alone. Ma has yet to emerge from the cabin, although a few minutes ago I heard her throw another log into the fire. Why does she have a fire going during the day? She must be beside herself over Hannah. I wonder if she even knows what hour it is. I'm hungry, Charles pipes up after the sun has started to shift into afternoon. Can we have some stew?
We can't make stew, Boil Brain, Joanna says and crosses her arms. We don't have a rabbit. Plus, we need to wait until Pa and Hannah return.
I'll go and get some more jerky, I offer, and stand to stretch my legs. I don't want any of them going into the cabin alone to bother Ma. Clearly what she needs right now is space to grieve over what happened. I'll bring dried apricots, too.
I don't want any more jerky,
Charles whines, and that's when Joanna turns and slaps him across the face. Hard. Charles's brown eyes widen, and he shrieks in pain, then dissolves into a loud fit of tears so sad and pitiful it nearly takes us all down with it. Emily pulls him to her and tries to soothe him, strokes his hair and glares at Joanna with something so fierce my little sister nearly begins to cry herself. Come with me, Joe, I say gently from the ground and reach to help her jump down. We walk hand in hand to the cabin. Joanna pulls at her dark curls and tries to conceal her quivering lip. I stop just before the door and kneel down to become eye level with her. I know this is scary, Joanna. I tuck her hair behind her ears gently, like Ma does, and she looks at me expectantly with shining eyes. But we cannot turn on each other, ever. We have to be able to take care of each other, all right? Charles is just worried about Pa.
I'm sorry, Amanda.
Joe's face crumbles, and she throws her arms around my neck.
Oh, why aren't they back yet? Pa promised by morning.
I don't know how to answer her. I kiss her temple and her forehead and her hair, then take her hand and lead her into the cabin to get lunch. Ma is still in her chair. She hasn't changed out of the nightgown she was wearing during the attack. It is wrinkled and dotted with dried bloodstains from Hannah. Her hair is wild, a startling difference to her usually carefully twisted bun. It lies in a tangled mass of black curls that stick out from all around her head.
I love you, Ma, Joanna says hopefully. I love you so very much.
Ma doesn't respond, doesn't turn around at all, and I hurry my little sister along to help me gather the food. By the time we return with stacks of dried meat and a pouch filled with soft golden apricots, Charles has stopped crying and is now sniffling against Emily's arm.
I'm so sorry, Charles.
Joanna climbs back into the wagon with my help and hugs him as tight as she can.
I love you, brother.
Well, did you get lunch? He asks eagerly, and Joe can't help but laugh.
We eat in more silence. When Emily is finished, she leans back and crosses her feet over the front of the wagon.
Why don't you and Charles go play? She suggests to Joanna after the children are through eating as well.
There's no need for you two to worry yourselves sick. Leave that to Amanda and me. We'll let you know if we see them coming. Joanna nods and takes Charles's hand, and I help the children down from the wagon so they can play tag around the front clearing. The sound of the game provides a welcoming end to the time-slowing silence.
Do you think it's a good sign that he is taking this long? Emily asks without shifting her focus from the trees. Or a bad sign?
I don't know, I admit. I want to say that it's a good sign, since they'd probably be back already if it was as simple as Hannah dying.
Do you think she's going to die?
Emily asks.
Honestly.
Telling the truth is difficult. mostly because it's the first time I'm fully admitting it to myself. I just don't see how she could survive after the condition she was in, I say. The doctor would have to have some sort of miracle medicine. While we continue to wait, I mull over the possibility of the forest once again in my mind. Committing to something so unknown doesn't seem like the best idea, especially since nothing ever seems to happen on the prairie during the day, and I have no idea how I'd even begin to talk Ma into going with us. I decide that we should stay put until Pa comes back. If there is still no sign of him by the later afternoon, I will begin considering going in after him myself, while Emily stays to take care of the children. Please come back to us, Ma, I think, breathing deeply through my nose. I do not want to make this decision on my own. If I did go, what would I say to Emily? That I don't think we're safe? That I didn't just need rest? That it wasn't me going mad, but the land itself? How could I convince her after our talk yesterday? Hannah. I told Emily during our conversation in the rain that Hannah was in danger. Surely she finds the circumstances of the ant attack strange, at least. I grow just a bit of hope. Just the thought of Hannah, my sweet baby sister with the dark curls and beautiful gray eyes, is too much to bear. I see her wet, red mouth pull into a grin from being tickled. I see her little eyebrows furrow as she stares blankly forward while exploring a new item or landscape with her sea star hands. And now I see her face covered in ants, her mouth, her eyes, everything, and the agonizing pierce of her scream echoes in my head. I put my hand over my mouth to keep from crying out. The children whoop as they chase each other around the wagon. I prayed for this. Oh, my God, I prayed for her to die. I am so disgusted with myself I can hardly bear it. I must make it right somehow, or at least give everything I can to try. Another hour passes without any sign of Pa. I tell Emily that I need to speak to her alone, that it's urgent. Once the children have promised to leave Ma alone, she suggests we take a walk away from the cabin for privacy. Just as long as we stay away from the fields behind the cabin, I say. Even in the middle of the day, the area chills me. I cannot wait to get my family away from here. If they believe me, that is. I do not understand what is happening. Emily breaks the silence of our walk right when we reach the homemade fire pit, halfway between the cabin and the woods. Why would Pa wait so long to come back? I look past the grasses and into the thick trees, much larger and more tightly clustered than the ones in the mountains, and the wind is much louder near them, too. I have not the slightest idea, I say, shifting my focus to my sister. But what I'm wondering is why nobody has come. You'd think that as soon as Zeke saw what happened to Hannah, he'd come to talk to us, even if Pa couldn't leave. The doctor's cabin is only 2 miles away. He cared about you enough to come, Emily. I looked again to the trees. I wonder if Pa never found his way there. Emily is frowning and solemn, crouching before the fire pit and poking at it with a stick, even though it isn't lit. Her braids are frazzled, and little strands of her dark waves have fallen loose about her face. Still, even when my sister should look terrible, she is beautiful.
Maybe.
Emily pauses to search wildly in her head for answers. Maybe Pa took Rocky straight to town, through the woods. For what? I ask.
A gravestone?
I guess that could be true, I say, but why wouldn't he come for Ma? Surely he understood that not showing up would worry her sick. I'm getting to feel seriously uneasy about the position of the sun. It's getting late already, and the idea of going alone into the forest to find Pa with dark quickly approaching doesn't settle right in my stomach, no matter how safe Zeke's grandfather swore the trees were. I need to hurry.
And on top of that, Emily says, there is still the body to consider.
What about it?
Where is it?
Emily sighs in frustration.
It doesn't make sense. Wouldn't Pa have at least brought Hannah back to begin the burial before she started to rot? Why would he bring her with him to town?
In truth, the idea of Pa going to town through the forest in the first place, without coming back for any supplies first, is a stretch for me to believe anyway. I don't want to say that, though. I need to be careful with how I speak to her. Emily, I say, and she doesn't turn from the fire pit. I must choose the right words. I must make my sister believe me. Do you remember our talk yesterday, when I told you that I felt as though Hannah was in danger? The wind picks up. The weather has finally started to cool into much more pleasant temperatures than when we first arrived. I wish I could enjoy it, the way we all enjoyed each other as a family over our feast last night. Was that really just last night? I do, Emily finally answers. She stands. I don't know what to think about it. If you knew that this would happen, I didn't. I burst out defensively, and my sister's eyes widen. She almost looks afraid of me. I mean, I was nervous that something bad might happen, but I didn't know that she'd be... I can't even continue. I wrap my arms around myself and sit on one of the half-logs before the circle of stones. Most of the ashes from our story time with Zeke are still inside. Emily stays where she is. I need Pop to get back, she says. I don't even know what I should do right now. What we should do, I say in correction. Come on, Emmy, please. I need you right now. I need you to believe me. That the prairie is evil? Emily cries. She is not convinced. She is angry. Sister, I can't trust you. I haven't been able to for as long as I can remember. I don't even want to know how you knew something bad would happen to Hannah, or why, or what that says about you. You cannot be serious. I stand now, my heart pounding in my chest. I thought we were to be dearest friends forever, Emily. How can you say these things to me right now? How can you find it within yourself to blame me for Hannah? I am still your sister. Her face softens at my emotion a little. Please, Emily, please. I'm sorry, she says, and shakes her head back and forth quickly. No, no, of course I cannot blame you for the ants. I'm just scared, I think. And very confused. Oh, Amanda. She sinks to sit on the log behind me, and I join her. I want to get our family out of here, I say, barely above a whisper. I want to go into the forest myself and find Pa, while you stay here with the children. And when I come back with them, we all need to leave for Elmwood as soon as possible. Let Ma watch the children, Emily argues. I can go with you. I want to find Pa, too. Zeke told me how to find his cabin. No. I say firmly, and look over my shoulder to the prairie cabin. Charles and Joanna are tiny flecks against the sky, still running around the front clearing in their game. I need you to protect the children, sister, and make sure that nothing happens to them. Ma isn't herself. She hasn't been ever since last night, and we can't count on her to take care of them in her grief. I think that the only person able to console her right now is Pa. What I don't mention is that I am also insistent on going alone because I want to protect Emily from myself as well, and also Zeke, on the chance that he's somehow preventing Pa from returning. The Kensington story is still fresh in my mind, not to mention the fact that I seem to evoke death upon any children that are near. Two gone now, thanks to me. I won't let it happen to the rest of them. Emily grabs one of her braids and begins to chew the ends as she thinks. A habit that has always made my stomach turn. She considers my idea as her eyes dart around the line of trees that begin the forest. All right, she says finally and stands from the log, but if you don't come back within a few hours, I will be coming in after you. I'm trusting you right now, sister. Last time you wanted to go on a walk in the woods by yourself, I know, I say irritated. I fight the urge to put my hand over my belly. You don't need to remind me. She lets out a quick huff of breath. I said I'd go along with your plan, didn't I? All right, then, I say, and go to hug Emily. Let us not fight at a time like this. She returns the embrace, but something about her feels stiff, hesitant. It makes me want to cry. When we get back to the cabin, Joanna and Charles are sitting together on the back of the wagon, their heads bent together as they whisper back and forth with faces far too serious for their age. They look relieved to see us. Ma kept asking where you were, Joanna says in a quiet voice. She kept asking about it. No matter how many times we answered her, she's acting very queerly. I think it's best that we all leave Ma alone for now, I say and look to the cabin. Smoke billows from the chimney. She needs space to process whatever it is that happened.
Where are Hannah and Pa and Rocky? Charles cries and buries his face in his hands. Why haven't they come back yet?
I don't know, Charles, I say, but I'm going to find out. Emily and I leave the children to their whispering to go check on Ma. She's sitting on the rocking chair, her hands folded neatly in her lap. She looks so dehydrated and exhausted, yet her demeanor is oddly pleasant. When she hears us enter the cabin, her head turns sharply in our direction. Her hair is still down, surrounding her face with kinks of curl. Emily, she says and licks her lips. They are dry and cracked from the heat of the fire, maybe. Amanda?
Hello, Ma. I approach her slowly with caution. How are you feeling?
Oh, just fine. She pulls her flaking lips apart into a smile. I was just thinking about you. Where did you two go just now?
We went to our fire pit, Ma, Emily says. Remember how we told you before we left?
You did nothing of the sort,
Ma hisses suddenly, causing both my sister and I to jump.
Tell me, my loves, did you go to the forest? Tell your sweet Ma the truth.
Emily and I glance at each other in alarm. Ma shrugs to adjust her filthy nightgown. The forest? I say. Her behavior is terrifying to witness. She's not herself. This is not my Ma. My heart will not slow down. Of course we didn't. It's true what Emily said. We only went to the fire pit.
Good.
Ma leans into the rocking chair, hands folded once more, and rocks back and forth while she stares into the flames.
You are never to go into those trees, ever.
Why?
Emily asks gently, and kneels down beside the chair.
Do you know why Pa is taking so long to get back, Ma?
Ma pauses, and for a moment, I think that maybe she's going to ignore my sister. Her eyes shine, dancing with the flames, unblinking, and the smallest hint of a grin flickers upon her face. She suddenly looks over at Emily.
There's a demon,
Ma whispers, her voice hoarse. She speaks as if someone else is listening, and I have to lean in closer to hear her words.
A demon in the woods, she whispers again. We don't want it slithering on its belly over here to us. Now, do we?
Emily and I stare open-mouthed at this woman with the wild hair and rough voice. I'm dreaming, I think to myself. This is a nightmare. What has happened to my Ma? Emily's eyes are growing wet.
Don't worry, though.
Ma turns her gaze back to the fire, her eyes bloodshot from forgetting to blink.
We're safe here in this prairie. Your Pa will be back before you know it.
What do you mean, a demon?
I stutter. Ma stops rocking then.
What was it, Amanda, that I just said? Not 1 minute ago. It was in the trees.
I'm sorry. I stand and take a step back. We'll leave you alone, Ma.
Good little children.
She sighs and begins to rock again. Her hands curl over each other in her lap.
I need to go fetch some meat for lunch. Your Pa wouldn't want us to starve on his account, I'm quite sure.
Ma stands and goes to the corner of the cabin, where she slides on a pair of Pa's work boots. It is far too early to begin preparing supper. Emily is no longer looking at me like I am crazy. I've only ever seen Ma hunt once, in the mountains when Pa tried teaching her how to shoot. She got a quail after 5 or 6 shots, but still swore she'd never use the rifle again unless defending us against a bear. As she stands at the doorway holding it now, with her bloodshot eyes and thin legs stemming out of boots far too large for her, and hair matted into dense tangles, she is an eerie sight to behold.
Goodbye,
she sings and steps outside.
Goodbye, sweet daughters.
Emily and I go outside at once to be near the children. I told you something here is amiss, I say under my breath. Maybe Ma saw something, like I did, or maybe she's hearing things. I will not hear any more talk about demons, Emily cuts me off. I'm uncomfortable with this enough as it is. Let's just stick to the plan to find Pa. We'd be silly to listen to Ma about the woods being dangerous. Zeke lives there, and he specifically told us that they were safe. She's clearly delirious in her grief. But you'll help me convince Ma and Pa to leave, right? I look to my sister in desperation. After Pa is back, you have to know that we aren't safe here.
I'll help you.
Emily confirms, expressionless, and I breathe a sigh of relief.
As soon as lunch is through, you should head out to Zeke's cabin.
22. We need to talk about Ma.
I know,
Charles pipes up, climbing to sit on the fence beside Emily.
I think something funny happened to her because she misses Pa and Hina. I find myself to be afraid of her.
I understand it, I say, and Emily nods. But you have no reason to worry. After lunch is through, I will be going on blackjack to find Pa.
Thank the Lord,
Joe sighs and sits next to me. Still, Emily adds, it's very important to let Ma be for right now. Don't ask her any questions. Only speak when spoken to. And always stay very close to me.
Will Ma strike us, do you think?
Joanna wonders. She will do nothing of the sort, I say. If you feel afraid, we can come up with a secret way to show it, so that you can tell Emily or me without alarming Ma. I don't think she's violent. I think she's just very, very upset about what happened to Hina. Or being driven mad by infant cries that nobody else can hear, I think. We mustn't upset her further.
Is Hina dead?
Charles asks. Nobody says anything for a while. Joanna kicks at the swaying prairie grass with her boot. If I must be honest, little ones, my voice is shaking. I think that perhaps she is. I don't know this for sure. It's just what I believe.
I thought so,
Joanna says, but begins to cry anyway. It doesn't take long for Charles to follow suit. Emily and I hug the children close while they wail into our sleeves. She's with our Lord now, Emily whispers through her own tears into Charles's hair. She's happy in heaven, listening to the songs of angels and basking in the warmth of the eternal light. I shut my eyes and picture it. A happy Hina with wings, with no more confusion or frustration. I imagine her sitting on a fluffy cloud, giggling and clapping her hands in joy. My last image of her stains the vision, makes it drip with black prairie ants lodged in her nose and ears and mouth. From the distance comes a gunshot, then another, then another. Ma must have gotten her rabbit.
What should our code be?
Joanna sniffs after their cries fade into hiccups.
To let you and Emily know that we're scared. I know,
Charles speaks up.
We should say, grasshopper bait.
I think she'd figure out that something funny was going on, Emily says with a half-grin. We need something a little more subtle. How about a tune, I suggest. You could hum a certain tune, and we'd know that you're afraid.
Good idea, Emily says. Now what tune should we hum?
I think about the last time I held Hina and hummed with her face against my chest, and my breath catches. How about Come Holy Ghost, I suggest. I always liked that one.
Oh, me too, Joanna exclaims. It really is lovely.
Very well, Emily says, then hops down from the fence. That settles it then. Try not to use it too often, though, or she'll catch on.
Amanda?
Joanna asks. From the distance, we can see Ma shuffling through the grass back toward the cabin.
Does Ma still love us?
Of course, I say and squeeze her hand. And Pa does, too.
I can't wait to see Pa again,
Charles sighs. Trust me, Emily says to the children and kicks at a rock. Neither can we. I'll call you when the feast is ready, Ma yells at us from the cabin door, waving with her free hand. The rifle is tucked under her arm, and there is a large bulging sack grasped in her hand. She disappears into the cabin. We wait for what feels like an hour. Smoke billows from the chimney on the roof of the cabin, and with each minute I grow more and more impatient. I'm about to suggest to Emily that I leave before the food is ready, when Ma pokes her head out from the front door and yells at us to come join her immediately. We all go together as I try to think of ways to sneak off without alerting attention to myself. The cabin smells funny, unfamiliar, meaty but not like stew or fried meat strips. A dead rabbit lies carved apart in a bowl in the corner, and beside it lie two others that are untouched besides the bullet wounds in their heads or chests. Their blood seeps down through the fluffy white fur, staining the new hardwood floor.